What is your full name?
Kenneth Winchester Gaines.
And where do you currently reside?
Columbia, South Carolina.
And when and where were you born?
March 12, 1947, Kennesaw, Kansas.
And what were the names of your parents?
Norma lived in Winchester at that time, and George Thomas.
And your grandparents?
My grandparents would be John Walter Winchester and Lenora Ann Winchester.
And on the other side?
Gaines
side, is it?
Yeah, Gaines would be my stepfather.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't really understand that. Okay,
yeah.
So your father's name was actually Thomas.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Do you know his?
No, I don't know that much about his side of the family.
Okay.
Although he is still alive and that's just,
We missed that in your mother's story.
Yeah.
Where did she meet your father?
Well, he was in the military,
mm-hmm.
so she met him, I guess, when he was from Hutchinson. And they met, I guess, here in Kinsley.
Okay. And let's see, I already know this. You have some brothers and sisters.
Let
me go through those.
Well, yeah, they'd be my stepbrothers and sisters. They'd be Stanley Gaines, Pam Gaines, Jackie Kennedy, and Kay. You want their last name?
We've got these, okay.
Yeah, Kay and Paul and Brenda.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess we've already, talked about what brought your grandparents on your mother's, so we can skip that. And you're too young to remember World War II, so we can skip that. You were born here, and you spent your first few years here, or?
Yeah, up until I was in the, I think I went through the first grade here.
First grade. Do you have any memories of childhood here, of that early time?
Kindergarten and first grade, basically, yeah. Went to North Side. Went to kindergarten over on South Side, but first grade was on North Side.
And then, I'm trying to remember, from your mother went to Oregon at this point?
Yeah, she went to Oregon. Yeah, that's when she went to Oregon, was, I think, after I completed the first grade, somewhere around there. Because I went to the second, third, and fourth grade in Oregon.
Okay, what was the school like out there?
Oh,
was it a big school?
They were inner cities. We went to an inner city school. You know, Portland, Oregon was pretty much segregated in terms of the housing situation. So the schools were segregated. So the school I went to was called Elliott Grade School, and it was predominantly a black school, but it had lots of problems, in terms of discipline. You didn't learn much of any substance, in terms of subject matter, as I can recall that in terms of what I had experienced up through the first grade in Kinsley, students there were very, very far behind. So I kind of drifted and got behind.
And it was a typical inner city situation.
Oh,
then.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. It was like kind of survival every day. You didn't think about, learning anything. When I came back to Kinsley, things were so much different. I mean, it was just like night and day the first day you went into school. I remember students sitting with their feet together, hands on their desk, and everything was sparkling. Hardwood floors were just shiny. So it had an immediate impact on me.
the inner city, Portland at that time was, I'm trying to remember, because this would be the 50s.
Yeah, about, what, 55 or something.
Were there problems with drugs and that sort of thing at that time?
No,
it was just poverty?
Didn't know anything about drugs. It was just the, you know, there was a section of town where most black people mm-hmm. lived. It was not that you couldn't live somewhere else. It was just the, mm-hmm. the I think the economic and just kind of the culture there, like everywhere else. You know, you had a black community that was concentrated in a certain part of the city.
Were the teachers not as good? I mean, what do you...
Well, I don't think it was really that. I think I had a very good... I remember my first grade teacher especially... I really liked her, not second grade teacher, but I really felt sorry because she was a white teacher, but I remember I've always felt sorry for her because she had such a hard time trying to teach anything because she always had to discipline somebody, you know, and it was very, very stressful for her, I could see.
Hmm.
So it was tough.
So you came back here to live with your grandparents.
Right.
Because your mother said you want, this was your sort of
decision in the way? Well, it was something certainly I dreamed of and something I wanted to do, but it was really her decision, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she could see that I was not performing anywhere near what I was when I was in the first grade. And so I went up through, we moved when I was in the, I believe in the third grade, we moved to a different section of Portland that was, we were the first black family to be in that part of town. And I can remember there was a lot of controversy about us moving in there. So we went to a school that was then predominantly white. And, some of the old habits that you learned in the inner city school kind of carried over there, so I wasn't showing much improvement. So that's when my mom decided that maybe it was best to go back to come back to Kinsley. And I can remember it was like just overnight from the first day on.
Did you do the whole first, fifth grade in Portland, or?
No, I did. I came back here in the fifth grade.
So
right.
Did you fourth that? Were you in that new school then?
In the third and fourth grade.
Yeah,
it was Vernon Elementary School,
mm-hmm.
right. So.
And was the discipline there more like Kinsley, or because it was a white school, or was it?
Well, yeah, discipline was not anywhere near as much of a problem. But if you didn't have a good base, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
You
were behind. So that just kind of carried over.
Do you think expectations were different for you also? Do you think the teachers thought maybe you couldn't do it?
You mean in the different...
In the white school, yeah.
Maybe. It certainly could have been. It just didn't seem... You know, it was more of a disciplinary problem. In other words, paying attention and actually doing the work, and then also going home and not getting a lot of reinforcement because my mom worked,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so you didn't get much reinforcement at all at home, and then I ended up having to help take care of my sibling, you
mm-hmm.
know, and that was part of my responsibility because until she got home from work,
mm-hmm.
you know. Probably couldn't do that now.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of latchkey kids.
I was definitely latchkey. You know, I had to change diapers and do all that stuff.
So she brought you back here in my car?
Yeah, I came back and I remember Mr. Metling was the principal at Northside, and I remember he, they tested me and all this stuff, and found that I was behind, and they worked with me to help bring me up and up to par and get me on the right track. And that was part of the positive part of coming back.
Now, were you the only black student at that time, or?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only one. And remember, we, you know, I had good friends and had a few friends who were not so good. But
you mean they led you astray, or they?
No, we just had friends that were taunted you racially.
Oh,
you know, that we always had to kind of battle against. But the fortunate thing was that I had good white friends, and also the administration of the school helped deal with the situation. Mm-hmm. So really, it was like you weren't battling this by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then that was when sports started, you know, basketball and these sports. And then, you know, I discovered I was pretty good at some of the at basketball, track, and all that sort of thing. So that helped put you in a different, I don't know what you call it, a different pecking order,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah, that could be.
You know, and so that kind of helped the academics too, because that kind of exposure, at least in my situation, made me want to do better in school too. It all kind of was a hand in glove sort of.
And were you a pretty good student then, once you caught up?
Well, once I caught up, yeah, I made steady progress, mm-hmm. you know, and I think probably when I got in junior high, you know, and beyond, I started getting above average, mm-hmm. you know, and then, you know, became a pretty strong, by the end, you know, by the time I got out of high school, you know, I was probably a good solid B plus student. Yeah.
And what was it like being raised by grandparents?
Oh, it was good, because they were very, you know, very well thought of, and they disciplined in a very positive way, and it was a very good experience, and they were always very supportive of school activities, you know, the extracurricular activities, you know, very supportive of that. My granddad would always come to the games, and you know, but I think more than anything, it was the peer pressure that I felt from my classmates, you know, that, you know, they made you feel like you needed to do well to be respected, so you kind of felt that, you know, and it helped keep you kind of on the right track, you know. And plus, being the only black person, you didn't want to be singled out as, the expectation was, you could feel the expectation was that you probably shouldn't do as well. So it made you, at least in my case, made me want to do better.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't always work out that way, but it did for me, because I didn't like to be, you know, to have people think of you in a negative light, because I felt like they felt that anyway. You mm-hmm. see what I'm saying? So in order to counter that, you would try to overachieve.
So you had both here in Kinsley. There yeah. were people who had low expectations that you...
But I mean, it was just generally, you know...
Or the whole country had that expectation.
Yeah, I mean, you just... I mean, when you're a black person, you just... You know that you have to do better. You can't just do average and be respected. You've got to, in order to really excel, you've got to do better.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You've got to really excel at something. So that's why once the sports were easy, you see, and then once you saw the results of how you were viewed and treated, then trying to get the other side of it up to par too was another goal that you just set and try to do that. But it was a little more difficult because you didn't, you know, I didn't get started out in the right way. So it was a lot of work.
You were the only child in your grandparents' home at this time?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was the only one. Uh-huh. Well, I think there was a 1 year that my cousin Michael Shepherd came here for a little while. She would be my mother's niece's son.
did you have chores, or were you mainly expected to be go to practice and extracurriculars?
Yeah, I did a lot of practice. I didn't have a lot of chores. You know, my granddad would like to, he would request that I, you know, hold the garden and that sort of thing. But by and large, he wasn't much of an enforcer on that. He knew I had to practice, and I had to do a lot of homework, and so I stayed pretty busy.
And you graduated in the class of 65. And when did sports start for you? Was it junior high then, or?
No, I was in grade. Fifth grade.
Fifth grade. What was your?
I had organized basketball.
They had organized basketball.
Right. We played Oakley, I remember.
Oh, my goodness, in fifth grade.
In fifth grade, sure did. And that was where I kind of had a breakout right there and discovered that I could play basketball, you know, because I'd never played in Portland or done any sports in Portland.
Were you tall at that time, or just average?
Well, I think I was probably about average height. Mm-hmm. Skinny, real skinny. Mm-hmm. You know,
handle the ball.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think probably at that age, my coordination was further advanced than most of my contemporaries, mm-hmm. I'll put it that way.
But you had not done any sports in Portland
no.
or anything, or street ball?
Oh, yes, I did. I played baseball.
Baseball?
I did play baseball. Yeah, played mm-hmm. baseball.
So. Well, that's interesting that they had, that they competed in fifth grade. That's awful.
Yeah.
At that time period.
It really was... unusual. We played, I don't know, two or three games.
So then you would have had JV, would you have junior high sports then too? Or probably.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, oh yeah.
All
that
the
was
way
junior
through.
High. Yeah, we had a regular schedule in junior high.
And
yeah,
you played all
football,
basketball,
football,
and
basketball,
track.
And track when I got in junior high. Mm-hmm. Track when I was in sixth. I think I started track in the fifth and sixth grade too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I really found out I could high jump. That's where Mr. Metlin got excited, because I started, you know, was able to jump almost his height, because he thought he was kind of short. Short for him. He was about 5'6" or something like that. And I was jumping his height, and he couldn't believe that, I guess.
Now, when you traveled with the team, did you experience that... discrimination at that time, or the team?
You mean in junior high?
Well, whenever.
Well, junior high, we didn't.
Like
Oakley. When I was in junior high, you know, I had a pretty strong reputation, you know, already in mm-hmm. sports, and really did not, you know, I kind of had a little, kind of little celebrity status mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. So if there was any animosity that way, I would have.
Well, in Western Kansas, too, you, as a black boy, you were unique.
Yeah, right, right. And the key was to be unique in a positive way, you know, because I'd hear my grandparents, you know, talk about, you know, segregation and things that they experienced when they grew up, and it always fascinated me that, you know, those things could happen. And I always wondered whether, I'd always kind of be alert to whether these things are going to happen to me. You know?
Now,
my grandmother was very fearful of, you know, I can remember, she always was very fearful of me being out, mm-hmm. especially in the evening with my friends and stuff, because she just thought that was just so unusual. I remember her always saying, you know, what is it they like about you? Aren't you afraid they might do something to you? You know, you can't be out there with those white people all the time.
I think in one of the interviews, and I can't, like I said, I'm old, my mind's mm-hmm. gone, I can't remember what, but someone was out with your grandfather
mm-hmm.
and had car trouble, and they asked him to go up to the farmhouse to get mm-hmm. help, and he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because he was worried about going up to a house with a white woman in it, even though it was right here in the county. But
they knew the rules. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. Because they would talk about having to sit in the balcony mm-hmm. at the theater.
But now you never did.
No, I never did. Never did.
That's what people have told us.
No, never did.
Mm-hmm.
never did, you know, I never did experience much discrimination, at least overt discrimination.
We also had, someone told a story about the teen maybe not, weren't going to be served, or you couldn't be served, you had to, do you remember that?
I don't really remember that. You know, it
in
might
St. John or something, maybe, I'm trying to think.
It seems like there was a time when I think the coach, they may have told the coach something like mm-hmm. that, and the coach made the, he didn't even hesitate.
Mm-hmm.
And we went somewhere
yeah,
else.
Definitely.
I mean, it wasn't even discussed.
Oh.
You know, they just it decided, you know, it would go somewhere else. So, I mean, my teammates always kind of protected me mm-hmm. in that way because they, you know, we were very close and they knew I was good in sports and they wanted to see me perform and they didn't want anything to interfere with that.
Were the teams you were playing, were there ever any slurs or anything? I had brothers who played basketball. And
No, actually the only time I ever heard any slurs was when I played summer baseball. I went to some of these little towns and played, you know.
And that would have been more of a recreation, not school
related.
Yeah,
that wasn't school related.
Well, that's a positive thing.
Yeah. But in organize, you know, in during school, I never did have that problem. You know, and it was always the people who come up to you and want your autograph and talk to you and ask you questions.
And so, what were some of your accomplishments, your teams or whatever, when you were in school?
You mean like grade? Junior high, high school.
Well, yeah, but how'd the basketball team do, or how did you, what are the records you set?
There was lots of records, and high jump, long jump, high hurdles, relays, basketball. We had some good district tournaments that we played well in and won. I remember my freshman season, I think we had a terrible losing season. I still remember. I think after that we had pretty decent seasons in basketball. Football was something that I really liked and played, but I think the coach really tried to protect me for track. You know what
uh-huh.
I mean? He didn't want to put mm-hmm. me in a position where I'd get hurt.
What position did you play in football?
I played end in football, mm-hmm. and I played safety on defense.
Because you could run.
Yeah, yeah. But he would have, you know, in junior high I played in the backfield. See where you're getting hit all the time, and they didn't want me to get hurt.
Yeah, my son played here too, and he didn't want to get hurt. He was a basketball player.
Yeah.
He didn't want to get hurt, and I said if they ever got the ball to him, he ran fast enough like you, they couldn't catch him because he didn't want to get hurt.
Really, I'm telling you.
And then in basketball, you played what position?
I played forward forward and center sometimes mm-hmm. in basketball.
You have some good memories of all those athletic
very
years?
Very good. I mean, it all, if it wouldn't have been for sports, I would have never got to go to college, mm-hmm. you know, because...
You went on scholarship.
Nobody in my family had any money to send me to college, so you had to depend on a full 4-year scholarship, especially at the school I went to.
And you went to the University of Kansas?
Kansas, right.
And did Kinsley equip you academically for the University of Kansas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, although I will say, you know, the first year or two, you know, my own lack of discipline was probably the most part. But, of course, you have a lot more pressure in college mm-hmm. because you know, when you travel and your practice time and all that sort of thing, means you can't take certain courses at certain times. Like, for example, all of your afternoons are pretty much taken up by practice, so you can't take certain courses. So it makes it a little more, much more difficult, I think, for at least at that time for an athlete to get through school on time and have any decent grades.
I think maybe back then they expected you to have decent grades more than they maybe do now.
I think maybe then they probably, it might be the other way around.
Oh, really?
Because they have more, help now for student athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And they, the focus is to also see that you, that these teams, that the athletes graduate.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, they just basically wanted to keep you eligible, mm-hmm. you know. And so if you were doing just enough to get eligible, that's really all they were really worried about. And so it's very, you know, for an athlete to actually make it through college on time and to major in something important, it's not easy. Because you're, mm-hmm. for one thing, after you get done with your practice and all that sort of thing, you are so, I mean, you're out there, what, 3 hours mm-hmm. every single day or longer. And by the time you get home, you know, trying to study, you know, you are so tired. But if you do that, you do that so long, you think that's just normal. You don't realize that people that don't have to do that, that's why they can do better in their subjects, is because they don't have that extracurricular and all that, you know, physical exertion and tired all the time, you know. So
and you were with track for 4 years at KU.
Right.
And what were your events? Yeah.
High jump, triple jump, long jump. And I ran high hurdle. You know, I had some school records in specials in high jump and triple jump.
Do you remember what they were?
I still have one. Well, in the triple jump, it was 52.5. High jump was about, I think I jumped, my best jump was about almost 7 feet, about 6'11". And I think that was right after my freshman year. And then, yeah, I think those were the two records, and I have a freshman record in the high jump, and I think I might still have a school record maybe in the triple jump, because
sure.
I had the United States Federation record for a good long while, triple jump. But, you know, really, triple jump's really hard on me. You know.
I think my son used to look at what yours. He competed against you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the record's up on the wall at the school here. He liked triple jump. And you would be traveling to the other colleges that were
yes.
in KU,
yeah.
same as.
With
and this
game.
Was it just spring competitions or was there college?
No, you had indoor spring. Well, in the fall. Fall and winter you had indoor, mm-hmm. and then in the spring you had outdoor.
So unlike basketball and football, you had it the whole...
Yeah, and that's one reason why I didn't play basketball, you know, because you'd miss the indoor season. You know, it's hard to do two sports in college. You know?
Yeah, I would think.
Yeah.
And so what was your major?
Education.
Education.
Yeah, my first time.
What did you think you were going to teach?
Well, I think it was, you know, elementary and secondary education, yeah. And then when I got out of school, I ended up taking a job with the state Civil Rights Commission.
Okay, hold that thought for a minute. You lived in a dorm at KU? Or apartments? Or?
Yeah, I lived in a dorm.
Did they have like an athlete's dorm at that time?
Yes. Well, yes, they did. Although track athletes were put in a dorm, they were put in the same dorm, but it wasn't exclusively for athletes.
Okay. No.
But we had like, we'd be all on like one or two or three floors.
And your team was integrated. Now at point, you weren't the only black man.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. We it was completely integrated. If anything, we probably had more black than white athletes. Yeah.
And how was that adjustment going? You know, from being in a minority here to, how did you feel at KU at Lawrence?
Well, overall, you were still tremendously in the minority, but on the track team, you felt probably a little more like, I don't know, you didn't feel so much as a minority on the track team. Although what you ran into was, sometimes the coaches did not understand the culture of minority athletes, mm-hmm. and sometimes there were some clashes there. Like, for example, mustaches, goatees, or beards was something that kind of goes over in the black culture, but our coach didn't always wanted everybody clean shaven, mm-hmm. so that was, you know, and of course you're talking about 1965 to 1968, when, you know, you've got the Vietnam War mm-hmm. going on, and
civil rights,
everybody, and everybody is kind of clamoring for change mm-hmm. and independence and that sort of thing, so that complicated things too. So I think the coaches learned a lot too, in terms of, you know, that they had to change some of their thinking. And of course you had, you know, John Carlos and mm-hmm. Those people down in Mexico who defied their coaches and seemed support of black power and all that sort of thing. So, you know, there were lots of us who were trying to emulate that, in terms of trying to assert our rights, you know, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. So it's a very interesting time to come up in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We interviewed Boyd.
Yeah.
And he had interesting, you know, it was an interesting time for him,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, everybody was trying to find, you know, what, you know, where does all this fit, you know.
Did you have, let me answer this or not, did you have trouble integrating into the black community, having been so much in the white community growing up?
A little bit, especially when I first got to KU, you know. It was strange. I remember one funny incident that was my first realization of that was when I had some loafers that they were called penny loafers, mm-hmm. if you know what they
yeah.
are. And I actually had the penny in the loaf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can remember my roommate was from Kansas City. And when he and some of his buddies saw these shoes, I'd moved in and I hadn't really met them yet, and they'd already been in the mm-hmm. room and kind of looking things over and everything. They saw these shoes and they used to tease me about those shoes. You know, they said, they'd always say, Kenny's got pennies in his shoes. He's cool because he has Kenny's cool because he has pennies in his shoes.
So that was a white, because yeah, I remember
yeah,
that was a white
yeah,
thing
that's
to do.
Kinda,
that was
yeah,
kind of
you didn't, you know, black kids didn't do that. You know, wear penny loafers for one thing, and then actually put the pennies in the loafers. Yeah. So that kind of, I said, hey, yeah, well, you know, I'm going to have to learn some things myself.
Was there a conscious effort to put black roommates with black?
I'm not sure about that. It turned out that way, but I think it was. I don't think it was intentional. I think they were looking more towards, you know, these were freshmen. You could kind of, if you wanted to change, you could change. But when you go in as freshmen, you really don't know anybody. Mm-hmm. But I never got the feeling that the coaches do that on purpose. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was probably a good thing because...
you had some catching up
to do.
Yeah,
I had some catching up to do. And so it probably did. It was probably a positive thing for me.
Because it would be a pretty sheltered life in Kinsley, too.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to...
Yeah,
you know.
I get a roommate from Kansas City, of course. I'm going to learn a whole different... perspective on life. And
your few years in Portland might have been good for you at that point. At least you had some idea.
Oh, yeah, I had some idea. But of course, this was a different age and time, you know. They're more mature now. And the black culture was just coming to the forefront as something that could be accepted and asserted. So that was very, very important too. In other words, this newfound kind of assertion and acceptance of black culture was something that you wanted to kind of be a part of, you know. So you did not want to be seen as someone that didn't agree with that.
Okay, and you mentioned Vietnam a minute ago. Were you worried about draft or anything at that time?
Oh, yes. Everybody was worried about the draft. Yeah. And very stressful. But then they came up with the lottery at that time. And I can remember you had to look in the paper to see what your lottery number was. And I can remember my lottery number came up 300.
So that was
that's sort of enough to put me almost completely out of it. They did put me out of it because they would never get to that number.
And so after college, I interrupted you. What did you start doing?
I worked with the State Commission on Civil Rights, which I was a field investigator for that.
And you were you living in Topeka?
Yes, Topeka, and then I was transferred to Wichita.
Describe what you did for that job.
Well, I did investigated complaints of discrimination.
All over the state?
Yeah, all over the state. Had a car and all that stuff. And that's where I kind of got interested in the legal field because we had administrative law judges that heard our cases. We had an agency attorney and who I met and had a lot of conversations with, and he'd gone to Washburn University. And then I met some of the judges that we used were actually lawyers, like from Wichita and other places. And so I got to talk with some black attorneys who were also hired as our administrative law judges, and would hear these cases. And so I got to talk with them, and that's kind of where idea got planted. Maybe I could go back to school.
So this would have been, you graduated from college in 69.
Yeah, I think I graduated, it was either 69 or 70. Yeah, I think it was probably actually 70,
and
probably the spring of 70.
So this is right after the civil rights legislation and that sort of thing.
Right.
What kind of cases were coming up around the campus?
There were housing cases. Most of the cases were in employment, though. Mostly employment, almost exclusively employment. And, you know, we conciliate the matter, or they could go to a hearing with an administrative law judge.
I assume, were mainly in the Wichita, the eastern
the
part.
Yeah, the Wichita area, Wichita, Hutchinson. Because that part of the state and city.
Now I don't have a sheet on you. Are you married or anything at this time?
No,
I'm
not
yet. You're still single.
Yeah, I'm still single.
Okay. And so when did you made a decision to go to law school? About what year did you go to law school?
I went to law school in 1973.
Okay, and where did you go for that?
University of Kansas.
University
of Kansas, and then that's where I got my first law degree. I got another law degree, of course, in about 1990 or so.
So did you pass the bar in Kansas then?
Emory in Washington, D.C.
Okay, and that's where you went to Washington?
Kansas and Washington, D.C.
Okay, after you got your degree, your first job as a lawyer was?
In Washington, D.C.
What kind of a lawyer?
Well, I worked as I was in the chancellor's office, and I was what they call an equity attorney in the chancellor's office there. the University of Maryland. And I also was attorney in the Criminal Justice Administration, too. I had cases with them, cases of appointed cases. And I was there probably until 1978. And then I went to South Carolina.
And then you started teaching there, or as a lawyer?
No, I came, I came in as a, actually I came in the administration. Mm-hmm. I was an assistant dean, and then, and lecturer. I had a title of assistant dean and lecturer in law. And then I did that for about 12 years, and then I went back and got another law degree, a more advanced law degree from England. And then when I came back from that sabbatical, I, started teaching full time.
And what would you consider your specialty as?
It's criminal and civil litigation.
Marriage. In here somewhere, anywhere?
Yeah, I got married. I was married in undergraduate school.
Okay.
I was married for about all of it, probably about 2 years. Didn't make it very far. And
any children?
Yeah, I have a son in with an Albuquerque now. Mm-hmm.
And what's his name?
Jeffrey.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And currently married or?
No, currently I'm not married, but I am engaged to a lady who he's engaged for a good while. Probably one. But at any rate, matter of fact, she's just she works for a large law firm in Columbia, and I've got about probably 300-400 lawyers in Columbia in different states. But she's in January. She'll be a U.S. magistrate judge.
Oh.
So she's moving up the ladder there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see. What else do we need to talk about? What have I forgotten? My goodness. How about church for you when you were here with your grandparents? Where did you attend church?
I always, well, I attended church then.
Yeah, but where? Here?
Here in Kinsley.
And what church?
Well, my granddad went to several different churches. You know, he went to Free Methodist Church. And sometimes he went to Assembly of God. There were times we went to Nazarene Church. You know, he just went to church. And he liked to sing in church. And he pulled me right along with him.
I was going to say, you sang also?
Yeah.
Around town.
Yeah. And also, Ms. Losey, I don't know if you remember Ms. Losey, who was a teacher here. You probably remember her. And my mom, she taught my mom, too. She had me do readings for the speech festival. And I took musical solos to the music festivals. And one of the stories that was in the paper in my senior year, the speech festival, and I think the speech festival and the state track meet were in Wichita on the same week, same day, and I had to do my speech and then change clothes and go run the high hurdles. You know? I mean, it was quite involved there, but that was one of the times where everything, you know, conflicted with everything else, but it all worked out. You know, one of the funny things, I got a one on my speech, right? Ms. Loki had me do a lot of these James Weldon Johnson things, and I still got the score sheet with the comments from the judge, and they gave me a one, and he wrote in red on that sheet, he said, "This contestant is a credit to his race." I mean, he really thought he was giving me this really glowing compliment, you know. He said, "He is really a credit to his race." We were all laughing. And my mom read that, and my grandparents saw that. He laughed and cried. Because he thought he was really giving me this comment. And But, you know, but the school...
And then you went to your track meet in the state track and got first, I suppose.
Right, yeah, right. That was when I set the state record in the high jump that day. And I think I also set a record. I might have set a record in the long jump, too. Yeah, that was all, you know, where you, everything was, you were at your peak in everything, mm-hmm. you know.
And you excelled. You were a Renaissance man by this time.
Yeah, it just seemed like, you know, you experience a certain amount of pressure, I think, when people acknowledge that you're good in something, you know. You don't want to let them down. You know, but you don't want to let them down in anything.
Yeah.
You don't want them to say, oh, he's good at high jump, you know, but he can't spell. You know, he doesn't know how to add fractions or something. You know what I mean? That was the part that really I didn't want to happen. So that helped kind of propel me into working hard on the other end of things, too.
Yeah. Okay, you were living in Kinsley at the beginning of the decline of the population.
Now
you've come back for the all-school reunion and that. What changes do you see?
Oh, there's lots.
Lots.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, you've got 8-man football instead of 11-man football. Schools are kind of consolidated, I think, now.
Downtown.
Yeah, the downtown just isn't anywhere near the same because you just don't have the same businesses. The same institutions don't seem to be here. It's just different. I think the main thing is that you don't have probably as many young people staying in the community as before. You know?
And you didn't stay here because your career choices.
Yeah.
And
right.
Was part of it too being the only black person? Is that why you wouldn't come back here, or was it just basically career?
It was probably mostly and probably exclusively career choices because your opportunities for employment were like in Topeka, for example, Wichita, and then if you're going to go back to school or you're going to go back to school somewhere, in one of the, especially in the bigger schools or in the eastern part of the state. So the opportunities just wouldn't be in Kinsley, you know, not the kind of opportunities that you wanted to pursue at the time and just weren't there. So you realize that rather quickly, you know, and that's kind of the unfortunate thing, you know. I think if there was opportunity, you know, besides, you know, farming and agriculture, probably, probably at least have the opportunity to stay. But that's what happens, I think, all over, you know, small towns. Mm.
It's not a bad place to live and raise children.
No, it isn't. I think, and I heard this from some of my former classmates and talking to them between tonight and today that they're moving back to the state because they want to either raise children or their grandchildren are here or something in some place in Kansas, but they think Kansas is better than some of the places that they've been living. And I think that for me, early on, Kansas was better placed educationally than, you know, at least in elementary and secondary education there, or in high school, was better than other places in terms of being able to excel at something, you know what I mean? And actually be in a position to work hard to try to do your best because you didn't have as many students, you know, so you're going to, you know, the pressure to to stay in, kind of stay in line for what quote unquote was greater, because you didn't have as many, and people knew you. Everybody knows everybody. You're not anonymous.
In your car, everybody knows.
Yeah, wherever you're at, you know. So that helps kind of keep you focused, you know, in a positive way rather than going the other way.
We've covered, I think, most, but she always is the backup for, because she's the, I'm not local. She mm-hmm. she has the things that you might want to think. Can you think of anything else you would like on this?
Well, there was a time that, you know, I think there was kind of a correlation between, you know, talking about working hard for something, you know, after I got started teaching, you know, full time, you know, then there became the issue of tenure, you mm-hmm. know, which was a challenge, you know, but that challenge was, you know, I kind of drew on my past experience in a small town like this, you know, to meet that kind of a challenge, you know, to stay determined, focused, and that sort of thing. And to you know, not get discouraged to a point where you don't follow through and give up on something.
So tenure for a college professor, you would say, is a good thing?
You mean in general?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's now it's being questioned.
Mm-hmm. I know.
It's being questioned some. And I think it is a good thing in some disciplines. It is a, I think overall it's a good thing, but I think it may be a little overblown. I mean, it's, you have to have some protection, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. in terms, you have to have some academic freedom, or you have to have academic freedom, and if you were, for example, on some kind of a long, some kind of a contract of some sort, and people don't like what you write or don't like the way you teach, you know, you're under attack, you see, and you couldn't do the kind of things that you really want to do. So tenure does, I think, help that side of it, you know, gives you the academic freedom, and I think that's very, very important. But at the same time, I think there are professors who don't really worry too much about that and would be happy to work on a contract, for example, a renewable contract. Mm-hmm. And I think if that option was available, I think it ought to be available. In other words, the emphasis would be on teaching,
right,
rather than at research institutions. The emphasis is really on scholarship, you know, they're on scholarship, and they want people that are going to continue to do scholarship. And one way to do that is to, you know, put tenure as a kind of as a carrot, mm-hmm. you know, to go after. But of course, after you get tenure, you're supposed to continue, you know, but that doesn't always happen, you know.
Here you were sort of in Kansas after college. You were an activist. Did you, when you were in Washington D.C., did you continue working with civil rights and that sort of thing? Or
yeah, to a degree, because part of my job was the campus equivalent, I guess, of kind of the state civil mm-hmm. rights commission. In other words, we looked into problems of discrimination. Maryland campus, and so yeah, I continued mm-hmm. that, and then when I went to South Carolina, then I was part of my job there also was to certainly make sure that our minority students were comfortable in the environment of the law school. South Carolina, of course, is very different.
That's a different culture, too.
Yeah, it was a different history, too. And they were under court order to desegregate. And so there was a lot of emphasis on, you know, how do we get more minority students and keep them here? Because it was something that, you know, not too long before that, it was the opposite way of how do we keep them out. They had two separate law schools before I got there. They couldn't. They had another law school that was just for black students. And their approach in South Carolina was whenever they were forced or ordered to desegregate, rather than desegregate, they would just create another school.
Separate but equal.
So it was separate but equal. That was the legal or kind of the jure response to desegregation.
Did affirmative action play any role in your, because you had a full year college scholarship and getting jobs or anything, like you were saying, trying an emphasis of having a more integrated college, did that ever affect your life?
Yeah, I think it affected my, when I first went to South Carolina, I think, because there was, when I went, there was no other minorities on the faculty or administration.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And even now, we only have four. We've got four professors now.
You're used
we've
to
got
this.
Five. We've got five because we got one administration. Well, no. Yeah, we got one administration and we got four.
How about
this is in the law school law now, school, of course, yeah. And of course that's out of about 45 to 50 professors. So
how about in your admission to law school at KU?
That was definitely a time when KU had a history of not admitting black students to the law school, because when I went to undergraduate school, there was no more than one or two black students in the whole law school. And when I went there, my entering class, we only had seven entering class out of about 180. So only seven of us. And believe me, we stuck together and tried to help each other. And fortunately, our classmates, our white classmates, really, really tried to help us and make sure that we stayed in. They shared everything with us. I mean, they really tried to include us, and because it was tough. It was very, very, it was a new experience for the school, and it was a new experience for us as students to have to be as rigorous in terms of our approach to our schoolwork, something we never experienced before. And
did all seven make it?
Actually, we started out with eight, and one lady, she was a black female, dropped out the very next day, so it was seven. We ended up with seven, and all seven of us did make it, and that was just, I don't know, it was just a miracle, I guess, that we did make it.
Were they the rest all male?
No, we had
some female.
I think we had I can only remember one other female. I think we only had one. I think all the rest were male. And we had one or two female, two females, I think. And going to law school was a major undertaking for a black student because you didn't have the resources in the first place. It's very hard to find resources. And it's expensive. Very expensive.
There wasn't a scholarship for that. Huh?
Yeah.
scholarship.
Yeah, it was harder to compete for scholarships in law school. It would be really difficult. And plus, you had to make sure that you didn't have any excess baggage kind of dragging you down. I mean, you had to devote full time, and all your priorities went to law school, you know, in every aspect. So you didn't, everything else took second, you know. Being married or something like that would be a real very difficult at that time. Or if you had kids or whatever, it would be very, very difficult, because then they wouldn't see you. You wouldn't see you, because I'm gonna tell you, it was 24 hours a day, and that was tough.
And that took 2 years?
Three. Mm-hmm. 3 years. Yeah. It was tough.